Hey everybody, welcome to season 4, episode 13 of the Hard Truth Inside the Football Injury Podcast with me, Philip Heidson, and Darren McAnthony, chairman and co-owner of Peterborough United. We're recording this on Sunday, and Trent Alexander-Arnold has just scored to put Liverpool 4-3 up. So you're somewhat distracted, but we wanted to get this in because we've both got some busy weeks coming ahead.
Well, you're moving house. I've got a lot going on, and I've got the game on in the background. There's like 4 minutes left, and the way Liverpool have defended today, I tell you, Fulham equalised now. It wouldn't shock me, but I'd be fucking devastated. I mean, 5 minutes ago, I was cursing everything about the mighty Reds.
Yeah, but I looked at the score because I was just telling you beforehand, I just packed away the TVs and everything, so I haven't been able to watch it. So I'm following on scores and fixtures on the BBC website, and like the old days of teletext.
Yeah, I remember those days. Crikey, you'd be keep like redoing it, hoping it comes up, you know. But fair play to Fulham. I mean, Liverpool haven't been good today, but Fulham have... very good technical team. I'm surprised they've struggled as much this season, but I suppose without Mitrovic is the reason for that. But yeah, Liverpool not on their best. I mean, I was cursing Klopp bringing on Endo, thinking we're 3-2 down and you're bringing on like a number six and he scores the equaliser. It's like,
is it a you need the 3 points with Arsenal winning yesterday?
Well, yeah. I mean, I don't think, I said this before, I don't think Liverpool are in a title challenge per se, because I think Man City will win and I think we're still a couple of players away. But you know, I'm starting to worry about Champions League. We're not beating teams like Fulham and Luton. And, you know, that seems to be an Achilles heel. So this will be an important win for the comeback and whatever. And I'll tell you one thing is that I'll tell you what, the Fulham left back has been superb. I wouldn't mind looking at him because Liverpool do, I think, need a left back, in the next couple of windows. And his pace, the way he's handled Salah today, he's a proper young player, Robinson. So, yeah, interesting. So, yeah, Fulham are attacking here with 3 minutes to go. So this will be like... Skidmark City.
It'll turn into one of those videos where the supporters commentate it while they're watching it.
Oh God, I tell you. But anyway, listen, if Liverpool come out of this with a win, but fair play to Fulham, decent. I think Liverpool have been a bit lackluster today. You know, my man Darwin's missed too many easy chances. Diaz hasn't been at his best. Just one of them games, but fair play if they scrounge out a win. But anyway, what about your mighty Bradford?
Yeah.
Let's start there again. Well, again, you know, good win in midweek.
Yeah, we beat Forest Green in midweek. You know, they say that, well, Forest Green were awful.
Yeah, you did text me that and say that they were absolutely awful. Yeah, yeah. But you've got to beat those teams. I mean, you know.
I know, right?
You know, at the end of the day, they're the ones you got
to
beat.
Yeah, those are the banana skins usually for us. We usually turn up to bottom of the table and make them look like Brazil.
You have to put them away. Yeah. You have to put those teams away, you know. I mean, I remember we were playing. It was a Cheltenham, I haven't scored since the old King died, and they went down to like 9, 10 men or whatever. And, you know, we struggled for ages to break them down. And you're thinking, that's one of them banana skin nights, you know what I mean? But no, good win for you. So you're on a good roll with the new guy.
You know, a win's a win. So, I mean, a couple of wins in the bag just, I think, keeps the tennis balls in the pockets for a little bit longer.
Keeps everything quieter, doesn't it? I bet you Ryan's had a more peaceful week or so. And, I'm sure, like, you know, what are you, a few points off the playoffs? So it's so tight in that league, like anyone can kind of do the business, can't they?
Yeah, I mean, it's, I'm just having a quick look at the tables because, like you, I'm not table watching yet.
No.
But
Far too early.
14. Far too early. So, yeah, I mean, now it's 5 points off the playoffs. You know, before it was, we're going to get relegated to the National League 2 weeks ago.
Well, listen, it was a good midweek for you. We had an unbelievable midweek game. I was so excited about that game, as mad as the 2-2 game sounds.
And that was against Stevenage for anyone who's not a posh fan.
Yeah, I mean, I said this at the time, Stevenage, forget about the name Stevenage, think about the team. I think they conceded 7 all season at home, very good at home. They'd lost one game, you know, fourth in the league, very physical, very experienced. And it was one of them games where we were mugged early on. We basically, I mean, we played unbelievable football. I think we had 600 passes, we had 25 shots. It was just, and Steven had scored 2 goals from like our mistakes. Mm-hmm. And they were scrappy goals and we're 2-0 down. And my missus was in the kitchen, I'm watching, and she was like, you don't seem to be too upset. I'm like, no, because I think I wanted to see, again, the young team. We've come from one behind, we've come from behind before. Yeah. Are they going to go under at Stevenage? It's the type of game with a young team you'd expect them to go under. Are they going to go under? Or are they going to basically like show us all now, this doesn't bother them?
Yeah, what they're made of.
Yeah, what they're made of. And then I was thinking, is the manager going to go under? Is the manager not go under? Is the manager going to bring Clark Harris on? Are we going to go back to type? Are we going to go target man? Are we going to make changes? And come half time, he didn't make a change. I was like, okay, good decision. We got half. I think we can score 4 or 5 goals. And we were brilliant, brilliant in the second half. I mean, we were just fearless. We just played. We didn't go long. We stuck to the game plan. And I just think, I said afterwards, another manager was disappointed not to win. I said, no, that's a brilliant point, because forget the result. It's what it tells the team, that they can do that against anyone, because not many people are going to go to Stevenage and come from two behind. Steve Evans and his team aren't mugs. So we played some unbelievable football. We got a lot of plaudits and compliments. Fair play to Stevenage. You know what I mean? Tough team to play against and beat. I think the amount of passes, goals, possession, the front four were superfluous. The midfield too. Yeah, it was very exciting. Ricky, unbelievable goal and assist, you know, playing number 9. He was man of the match. You know, your real coming of age game. Yeah, just very, very good. Good point. You take the point, you know, and down the line, you think that's a good point, to be fair. But 9 times out of 10, you win that game 4-5-2. Mm-hmm. So, but it's just one for belief. And I was just very, very proud and very happy with what I was watching. And I was right, even right to injury time, I was just smiling and watching it and going, even if they scored, I'd give a fuck. We just played without that. You know, watching us choke against Sheffield Wednesday, mm-hmm. you know, and all those experienced players, and then the decision to go the other way, it was kind of like it backed it up on Tuesday.
Yeah, it's like no inhibitions from them.
If our 11 had played at Sheffield Wednesday away with the counter-attacking pace we have, we'd have gone there and won that second leg. And I'm looking back in time. But anyway, it was great. We were great. And yeah, really enjoyed it.
We've talked about Steve Evans a lot on the pod. We've had Steve Evans on the pod.
The Mighty Reds have won, by the way. Yeah.
I just flick over on my on the BBC.
It was brilliant. Yeah, we have spoken about Steve Evans. Yeah, carry on.
How has he done it? You know, how has he turned Stevenage now into, you know, what are currently in the playoffs in League One and tough to beat?
Steve has an identity. He has certain players he wants to get in. He gets criticised for being physical and direct. Fair enough. He won't hide behind that. I don't think that's what Stevenage are all about. Mm-hmm. What he does is he signs players with know-how. He signs players that work to the patterns of play him and Reigns work on. Players that are physically strong. Players that are physically fit. He turns them into set-piece animals, dangerous. You know, he basically makes sure his defences are strong. So even against the better teams, they hang in there and hang in there. They'll always score goals. He mix matches the types of players he has. He's obviously not a big proponent of youth, even though he might say he is. But, you know, he has his type. He signs a lot of players. He builds that team spirit. He loves being the underdog. He plays up to that in the press and talking about, mm-hmm. you know, us before the game, saying we should be, you know, top two favourites and all that and stuff. He's very good with words. And he somehow convinces owners to overspend. Like, I know the wages he took on with, like, the Thompsons he signed off us and you know, obviously our left back from Dan Butler.
Yeah.
It was great. Yeah, it was great to see them do well. And, you know, and Dan's played every game. And, you know, those players were on substantial wages that Stevenage have never paid before. But he's convinced Phil Wallace. You know, he's bought to buy into the dream, and he's done that really. And fair play to Phil, he's backed them. So they're not going to fall away. Like, if people think, because what Steve will do, he will try and force in 5 or 6 signings in January. Because the way he manages, he needs new players every window.
Is that because he burns them out? Or is that because
yes.
like, if your face doesn't fit, you're straight out?
I think it's also the way he manages, because he's hardcore. Yeah. And I think he needs fresh faces and fresh people and new people listening to that and whatever. And if you get behind it, you've got a chance. Rotherham did it. So, you know, kudos. He's manager of the year at the moment in League One. Mm-hmm. You know, like, listen, you can give us all the plaudits and we play great football and we do this and whatever else. But like, Steve is manager of the year, because if you look at the club, if you look at the circumstances. So, you know, and even at his age, I mean, fair play to him and Reigns are just like that. You know, you'd call them maybe the odd couple, but they just know what they're doing. They're professional. You know, they're relentless. That's what they are. They're relentless, and their teams end up being relentless.
Well, Paul Rayner even more so than Steve, I think, isn't he?
Yeah, probably. Yeah, and it's exhausting on the benches. It's exhausting on the players. But we didn't let any of the smoke get in our eyes on Tuesday night. We just stuck to what we did, and you know, yeah, very happy with that. So good luck to them, and you know. A lot of teams are going to like dive by the sword going to Stevenage on Tuesday nights. Trust me.
You know, you get wound up, and when you go 1-0 down, that's shut up shop. And so even harder to break down.
Yeah, and even the second goal, we were basically on the edge of their box looking to score, and they broke. And then it was like a pinball thing, and it was just 2 shit goals to give away, and you know, whatever. And I love Steve. Even he was moaning in his interview afterwards, they should have had a penalty and this, that, whatever. I says, like, behave yourself. It would have been like the greatest robbery since mm-hmm. the great Brinks robbery back in the 60s or 70s if they'd won that fucking game. But anyway, it was really good. It was enjoyable to watch. It was enjoyable, like, to participate in, and really, really enjoyed it. So onwards, upwards it is. You take a point on a Tuesday night when you're 2-0 down, and it's the learning and building blocks from it that will give you more than winning the game.
And then, you know, one ex-manager there follows another ex-manager on Saturday.
I'm not going to lie. I fucking enjoyed winning yesterday against them too. Really enjoyed that. Like, really, really fucking enjoyed that. So, you know, Darren was under no illusion for me.
That's a must-win game.
Yeah, they don't leave our place, you know what I mean, at the end of the day. So, no, I enjoyed winning that game. So, yeah, yesterday was an odd one. We had 7-8 one-on-ones. Easiest chances you're ever going to see. Everyone missed. Our front four could have scored basically a goal each. Ricky could have had a hat-trick in 8 minutes. I think we put a lot into Tuesday. And I think we were probably not at our B or A. We were at a C, which is a compliment to the lads because they dug in and won the game. Yes, Doncaster came into it. And Doncaster's best chances came from when we missed. They broke down the other end and then they had chances. Our goalie was very good. He doesn't get a lot of credit at times, but he kept us, you know, he made saves when he had to. We were sloppy at times. The last 20 minutes, more sloppy than anything else. But again, the minute they scored, we basically were 2 yards. And you have to, I said to the manager as well, and people criticizing Ricky and other players for missing. Sometimes you're going to get an opposing goalkeeper who's man of the match.
Yeah.
And their goalkeepers made 4 or 5 saves that were absolutely top drawer. So yes, we've missed, but their goalies made some very good saves. You have to give credit to their goalie. But even if they'd equalised by some fluke with 9 minutes of injury time, I always felt like we have another gear we could go up. So anyway, we've dismissed them. We move on.
Move on to Leeds at home next.
Great draw. Woke up to that. The manager just saying, yeah, the Leeds fans love me. They give him some serious abuse. So yeah, that's going to be a sellout. Leeds fans are brilliant. They travel in numbers. Our fans are going to be up for that. Hoping the Leeds manager maybe rests his first team because of the games over Christmas. Well, you know, I'll say jokingly, we're probably going to rest a lot of our first team. And that's going to be a cracking game. Leeds play some great football. We play some great football. So
they travel in their numbers too.
Yeah, we'll have 13,500 in that grant. You know, all hope to be at that game. So looking forward to that. Chance for us to make a few quid, and if we can manage to win or get some TV highlight money, it's even more in the kitty. So yeah, really, really happy about that one. It's good.
Well, you're not two Premier League teams playing against each other, so I'm not sure if you'll get the chance of a TV.
They have to look at the FA Cup and look at it and go, you know, do you want Arsenal and Liverpool playing in the first round? They've got to do some sort of a seeding so that doesn't happen, because you're probably going to have Newcastle Sunderland on TV. You're going to have Arsenal. You're going to take basically 100 grand away from lower league teams.
Yeah.
So this whole argument about, and let's face it, I'm not sure Arsenal and Liverpool are going to play their first strength team.
It's the opportunity for BBC to have those teams on TV.
It is. And I'm sure Wrexham will end up on fucking TV again. I believe they were on TV today. Someone's going to look into that as well. Stop feeding the rich. Like, stop. Like, I think Wrexham have been on TV 5 times with ESPN and stuff.
Yeah, you know, they're always on ESPN.
Like, stop. Any club in League 2 that's turning over 17 to 20 million quid, they don't need the FA Cup money. I'm sorry, Wrexham fans aren't going to like me saying that, but, like, stop. Like, the FA Cup's about the poor. The FA Cup are about people who are skit members. The FA Cup's about giving them the TV. I don't give a fuck if you're... Like, they didn't play our replay against Salford. They played some fucking other game, and it was one of the best games of the round. Like, you know, think... Like, whoever's planning the TV fixtures, and the problem you've got now at the top seeds, Liverpool, Arsenal, Sunderland, Newcastle, they're going to take 2 of the 3 games or 2 of the 4 games away. That's money that Maidstone could have, that, you know, any, you know, other clubs lower down who've, like, traveled that far in the rounds to get, you know.
That's their once-in-a-lifetime shot at the third round.
Yeah, you know, so maybe when we're negotiating all these deals and it's all based on cups and stuff, we should suddenly, you know, they want to take replays away. They want to do this. Well, that's great. Let's do seedings. Let's make sure Premier League clubs aren't on TV. Let's do it as a rule. So seeding so they don't play each other, so you're not missing a Liverpool Arsenal on TV. And then let's make a rule that there's no TV game, you know, for the big boys unless they play somebody lower than League One onwards.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's just do a couple of simple things. You know, League One, League Two, non-league. You get a Premier League club, you've got a chance of TV. Championship versus Prem, no. You want it to be League One, League, because Championship get 6-7 times the money we do. So no. Let's look after the paupers. Let's look after the little guy. Let's make sure that they have a fighting chance of being on TV. And I'm not talking about playing, you know, Gillingham and Bradford on TV. I'm talking about a higher club, lower club. Let's do it properly. You know what I mean? So, you know, my opinion.
How about seeding where Championship and Premier League clubs have to play away unless the other team wants to switch the
picture? 100%. Those are your 3 things. No Prem clubs play each other. No TV games for them. You know, unless the champ are playing a lower league team or whatever else. And third, as you said, you make sure that the League One, League Two, non-league are at home. until you get into a round where they can maybe, you know, then draw a big boy away.
Draw Man United.
Yes, correct. Maybe give them the choice.
Yeah.
So if they end up getting Man United at home, I'd rather go to Old Trafford and get paid £1 million. So you get the choice. It can all be done so quickly. So these are really, really good things for fans. These are easy things to fix, easy things to adjust. We spend so much time fucking arguing about all this nonsense at times. And this is stuff that's just like so easy to do. And you just want somebody to come out and go, common sense, that's what we want it to be.
And so you've got Arsenal under 21s on, is it Tuesday night or Wednesday night this week?
Yeah, last 32. You're in the last 32 of them as well.
We've got Liverpool under 21s.
Yeah, so we want to win that cup. I'm sure you do as well. Trip to Wembley. You know, there's prize money to win on Tuesday. I think the manager will be obviously, you know, playing a lot of the squad. Arsenal are very good. I think Tottenham are obviously doing better than them in the equivalent league. So we dealt with Tottenham. So let's see how Tuesday goes. And then we got Oxford at home next Saturday. So, yeah, it would be nice to have the week of three home wins. You know, the Oxford game's an important game, obviously, in the grand scheme of things. You know, they're up there. They're doing well. So, yeah, an exciting week. Who have you got on Saturday?
We've got Salford at home on Saturday. You know, Salford have struggled like we have. And obviously, Graham Alexander going back there as well.
Yeah.
But that should be, you know, it's always a tough one. But, you know, we usually don't do okay at home against Salford. We just always struggle away.
No, that'll be it. That'll be a good game. So you're on a nice run of form. You seem to be turning the corner slightly, which is a great time, really, with a busy festive period coming up, because the festive period really allows teams who aren't doing great to suddenly start climbing and get some hope.
And does it determine like who you can go for in January?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, if you're in the market in January, yeah, I don't think we're in the market for much in January. We, as we say, we oversigned at the end of the window and didn't move on Clark Harris or Ronnie. And, you know, so we're not going to be really massively, you know, in the market in January, one or two things here or there. And if PK gets, you know, dragged back to Rotherham. So for you guys, I don't know. Obviously, you're probably looking at January as, can we go again? Can we give Alexander a couple of players he needs for his style of play? You know, I get that when you've got a new manager. So you need that January window maybe just to adjust here and there.
Yeah, I think there'll definitely be some outgoings. Jake Young, I imagine, will come back from Swindon. We kind of touched on that last week.
Yeah.
You know, we've got some long-term injuries that are coming back as well. That's almost like new signings. We've got Vidane Oliver, who just hasn't played at all, who's just finally coming back. The Patson lad who was at Harrogate, who did really well the first couple of weeks of the season, has been out since then, since August.
Okay.
He's coming back. So.
So you need to make some adjustments. So January will come at a good time.
We need
time
to get a smaller squad. We've got too many in the squad.
Yeah, yeah. And I get that. And we feel the same way in the forward areas when Clark Harris gets sold. You know what I mean? We're left with, we'll have three number nines. You know what I mean? Three vying for that number nine spot. So the only thing we might do is if Ronnie goes as expected, we might just sign one more in there. You know what I mean? For a bit of security. And then, you know, if Chelsea calls Sturridge back, we might get someone there to compete with Harrison. And obviously the right back, if PK goes and you don't want to lose your skipper. We're going to say early on to them, if you're pulling them back, don't think we're coming back in late in the window. You know, we've got to go out
and move on.
Yeah, and we love him. We love him, and he's a great skipper, and I don't think he wants to go. So I'll have to look at that contract and see if there's something in there where he has to agree with that for him to go back. Because I'm sure he'd be like, no, I'm staying, you know? So, yeah.
Well, do you like, and for a player, you know, I'm sure a player wants to be involved in an attacking winning team in a winning environment versus a losing environment, even if it's a division higher than being in the Championship.
And I get he's loyal to Rotherham because they paid for him, they bought him, they whatever, and I have to respect that. But he, you know, he's not from a million miles far from us from where his family are from. He's our skipper. He's one of the oldest players, but he's only, I think, 24. And if you watch him, he loves this squad. He loves the players. They all look up to him. So I think if you put a gun to his head, he'd want to stay. But I don't want to speak for him, and I don't want, you know, to get him in trouble with Rotherham fans or the Rotherham press or whatever else. So we have to be respectful. Rotherham, you know, did the deal with us in the summer. We've done our bit. You know, I was always under the impression we'd have him for the season. The callback was there for in case something happened or they had injuries. So it'd be a kick in the bollocks if they did call him back, but that's football that happens. I can't squeal about it. Can't squeal and bitch about it. That's just the way it is. We have a plan B in place.
You know, for players like Ronnie, how much conversation goes in outside the window? Or is it kind of people are looking, they're kind of deciding what they're going to do, but they're not really going to make any decisions until the window opens up again and they see what else is available?
Yeah, I mean, we spoke to his agent. His agent, he's got a new agent that's a very good agent that deals with a lot of the big boys. They're already speaking to three or four clubs. I mean, this is the captain of the England under 20 elite team. I mean, the only one outside the top five Premier League clubs. And, you know, it's time that boy got the dream move. You know, and I would expect that to be done pretty early. And, you know, he's just on another fucking level. It's a disgrace he's still playing at our level. A disgrace. He's miles, miles better. You know, he could play, watching the way Liverpool defended today, comfortably he could play in their team. You know, so
I'm sure there's going to be a few clubs in a couple of years are kicking themselves for...
Yeah, that's they are. It's going to be a big mistake they're going to look back on, you know what I mean? So, you know, a lot of our players, look at Ivan, look what Sammy's doing in the Championship, look what Jack Taylor's starting to do for Ipswich, you know. We have players, obviously, that, you know, and we have in our team, it's littered with players who are going to play at the top, and fans are starting to panic about that. And, oh, my God, and oh, we're going to lose this player, lose that player. And I'd be like, calm down, that's not on the horizon. So, you know, at the end of the day, we know pretty much who we want to do business on in January, and then we worry about the rest in the summer.
Yeah. Now, something that might be on the horizon if MLS has its way is sin bins and orange cards.
I don't know if you saw
that story.
Yeah, not for me. That's like the old penalty thing they used to do from the halfway line, where you ran one-on-one or whatever else. Yeah, not for me. We're changing a lot about the game. We're modernizing it, and I love all that, but I'm not a proponent of the... I know it works in rugby union, but I'm not a lover of the sin bin, the orange card. I'm a lover of good officiating. If we just have good officiating, if we support referees, if we have better referees, if we put more into that, we won't need sin bins. We don't need orange cards. We perfect the tech. We'll be fine. I think everyone gets overexcited about VAR and overexcited about whatever. I think in the next couple of years, if the right decisions are made, the right strides are made, and I still think Howard Webb's that guy who's now, you know, in charge or whatever. Is it Howard Webb? Yeah, the referees department. I think we can get it right without needing to completely throw the baby out with the bathwater.
No, it's more about interpretation, isn't it?
And it is interpretation.
Always, I mean, it's a human behavior of consistency too.
And we do get our knickers in a knot afterwards about days of articles about it and this decision and that decision, like the Newcastle Arsenal one recently and whatever. And it's just like, can we just get on with it? You know, can we just look, this is it. Nothing's ever going to be perfect, but can we get it to as much perfection as we can? Can we take the pressure off where we're just hammering officials, where we then force more human error? Can we just do things right? And I think we can. So again, it's like a bit of a boring subject to talk about, but fuck sin bins, fuck orange cards. It's fucking ridiculous. And sometimes you just, like, your head explodes when you read some of this nonsense.
Now, we had the draw for the, was it for the Euros, wasn't it, next year?
Yeah, I said to my missus, you England, I'll tell you, you don't have to get easy fucking groups, do you? I mean, my God almighty. Talk about a passage. Is the quarterfinals next? Talk about like a free gift to the quarterfinals.
Yeah.
If you don't win that group, I'll tell you, you need to be all hung up and strung up by your bollocks.
Well, we don't deserve to be to do anything if you can't win that group. I mean,
correct.
Against to the others.
Correct.
But it's not, you know, having France and the Netherlands in your group.
You got to be winning the Euros. I'm sorry. You got to be winning the Euros. If you don't win the Euros, you got to be looking at Southgate. I know he's done brilliant and whatever else, but if you don't win the Euros this time, I mean, who are the strongest teams that you'd worry about? The only team France is the only one. England have to be with this, because these players, Harry Kane, his peak will be gone probably by the time the World Cup comes around. This is like, you know, with the players you've now got, if you can sort out, if you can stop picking his favourites, if you can stop picking players that are out of form, if you can pick players based on form, if you can pick players based on, you know, he'd be still picking Trippier when he's 38. You know, if you can stop playing right backs at left back, there's enough good players in each position in England that are English that could play in that team for fun. And I am convinced you get the right midfield. And I'm a Jordan Henderson fan, but he does not belong in that midfield. Calvin Phillips does not belong in that midfield. If you get the midfield right with what you've got in there with Rice, with Bellingham and one other, you know, England can be, they could win the next two major tournaments if they get it right.
I mean, with Jude Bellingham and the way that he's progressed since he went to Real Madrid.
Oh, what a talent.
As much as, you know, I've been a supporter of Southgate, I think it is win or bust for him now.
It is win or bust. And I do. I think with the squad you've got, and if you can stop picking centre-backs who are, you know, not in the team and for their clubs and are out of form, and like I said, stop playing right-backs, left-backs, stop trying to pigeonhole in an extra defensive midfielder. I don't know why. I've always said that about, you know, wear double condoms and whatever else. And I'm taking. But if you can let the foot off the pedal, if you can stop being that conservative, I think England could win the Euros. And I think it would springboard them to the World Cup where they're going to be a threat.
Yeah, like when Spain did the back-to-back.
Yeah. My only concern would be the humidity with English players in the USA, knowing what the USA is like.
Yeah. And I was going to say it depends on the draw, but really in the middle of summer, you're going to be humid wherever you go.
It favors the South American team.
Yeah.
So that's the only concern with where the World Cup is. But I think England, with the age they're at, the players they've got, Trent Alexander-Arnold now, if you can fix that one, maybe stick him in there with Declan Rice. You know what I mean? And basically have Bellingham, Rice and Trent. You're going to have, you know, one of the best midfields in world football.
Now, just looking at the going around the leagues a little bit. So in the Premier League, we talked obviously about Liverpool and getting that 4-3 win today. Also hey! Chelsea, Brighton 3-2.
Who won the game?
It was 3-2 to Chelsea.
Yeah, Chelsea are going to be a bit like that. They're going to be a little bit like hit and miss.
Yeah, and they were like, down to 10 men in the second half.
No. Like, they got slaughtered by Newcastle 2 weeks ago. They had a 3-3 with Arsenal. You know, they took Man City, or I can't remember the Arsenal score. They took Man City 4-4. They're going to be a bit rag-arse rover, score goals, let in goals. But Pochettino will get it right. But what you are seeing is you're seeing goals and football. Mm-hmm. And that's going to please the Chelsea fans. And by the way, Brighton are no mugs. To be scoring 3 goals against Brighton,
I think Brighton's been one of the bogey teams for Chelsea over the last couple of years.
Correct. They've taken all of Chelsea's money and they've been taking points off them. So that's a hell of a result. I really do think Chelsea are going to have their act together. Like I predicted 2 years ago about Arsenal, mm-hmm. I'm putting the prediction in that Chelsea will be a threat over the next 3 to 4 years.
And then today we also had Bournemouth and Villa drew 2-2. Ollie Watkins got a last-minute equaliser.
What a great result for Bournemouth. I didn't see that.
Yeah.
They're in form. They're in form.
Almost better, you know, if it wasn't for that last-minute equaliser.
They're in form. Aston Villa are no mugs. They're going to be, Champions League competition. You know, Unai Emery has done an unbelievable job. Listen, it's exciting. And then you've got Tottenham Man City later on this afternoon. So it's, that was important for Liverpool today, because the one thing in the back of my mind was top four. It's, you know, you got City and Arsenal strong. And then you're worried about Villa are fucking really strong. And then you're thinking, if Liverpool shit the bed against Fulham and they shit the bed against Luton, and it's those teams that you're thinking, we have a bit of a problem. So that win today is going to propel Liverpool. That was really fucking important today. So I'm loving that.
And a good win for Everton yesterday away at Forest.
Yeah, I said that about Daichi. I think he'll keep them up. I think they'll get some of those points back. So I don't think Everton are going down. I think, you know, Sheffield United are down. Luton, I still think, you know, I don't know if they're going to stick or shift in January. That's going to be key for the board at Luton. You know, Burnley now won yesterday. I don't know.
So if you were Luton, in Luton's shoes, so you've made it to the big time. You've got the opportunity for the money.
Me and Barry would be writing £20 million deals over 5 years for some French attacker in the fifth division of fucking France that nobody's ever heard of.
That we'd sell for holidays around the world.
We'd sell it for $100 million 2 years later, but we would be doing deals. As much as I'd spend the money on the training ground and the stadium and financial prosperity for the next 5 years, I'd still, part of me would be like, no, we got to do some deals here. We need, you know, we got to bring in some young attacking talent, and you know, whether it's French, Italian, lower league, whatever, you know, we'd still do it. So I'm not criticizing Luton. I think their approach was, see where we are by January, and then do you take the gamble in January? If Luton are like there, and they're like, you know, they think, okay, if maybe we now go and spend, because they'll have money to spend, now we go and get two players in, you know, that we can go and do. And the way you would look at it is, can those two players drop into the championship with us and help us win the championship? So you've always got to have one eye on improvement. You know, if we buy a player, but they're not quite ready for the Prem, but they drop into the champ next year, Luton will be a force next year. So it's going to be one of them sticker shifts. But I fully respect whatever Harford and his board do, because they've got everything right the last 5-6 years. Everything.
I'm sure it's a very difficult decision, because it's either, do you take the money for your one shot and it's, you know, a life-changing amount of money for the club, or do you, and it's very easy to piss that money away.
And they've got a new stadium to build. So, I, you know, they do everything right. So who am I or anyone else to question anything Luton do? Because they've got every decision right the last few years. So, yeah, you know, good luck to them. I don't know what I you know me, I'd probably go all in. I would.
Now, on Sheffield United, so, you know, obviously not looking good. They lost 5-0 yesterday to Burnley. From a manager situation, if you already have given up, and the writing is on the wall, and it's like, okay, we're going to take this, do you still look at changing your manager out? Or do you think, okay, let's let the manager we have in place, assuming that we've still got a good relationship with him, build for next season?
You know my answer. I'd be like with Fergie, the champ, like, stick around. Don't resign. Don't quit. Stick around. Let's rebuild. Let's get our ducks in a row. Let's move on the players we think really let us down and not try the leg. You know, let's tell those players. Let's tell the fans. You know, right now, okay, we're in shitville. And, you know, come January, if they're 10 points adrift, you're like, we are planning for the champ, but we're planning to win the championship. But the problem is the owner is like, is he selling? Is he not selling? Like, shit or get off the pot. You're like, you know, the uncertainty of, are we still going to be in the situation where a year ago they were close to apparently in big trouble? But I'm not going to always believe what I read about that. Are they going to be in that situation again in the champ next year? So what do they do? So who knows? I was happy for Vincent Kompany winning because I liked him and I know he's got his way of playing. So I kind of hope Burnley do okay. I couldn't call the other two. Sheffield United are down. I can't call the other two spots.
And that's good because it's not obvious.
No, it's competitive. It's competitive, you know. And I think that the points decision on Everton needs to be made quickly because you don't want to go into March or April where Everton are in a relegation battle and a team beats them and thinks we're staying in the Premier League and then suddenly Everton get a reprieve, get their points back and that team goes fucking down. So the one thing you want to do is make sure that appeal is heard quickly and the decision is made quickly so everyone knows where they are. There was this situation where Juventus, I think, lost 20 points and then got a load of points back and then suddenly a team who thought they were in the Champions League or Europe were dropped out. So that's not fair. So the speed on that process has to be quick. What else have we got, Philip?
So we have in the Championship, just looking down those results, so Sheffield Wednesday getting Sami Smodic scored again for Blackburn, but on the receiving end of Sheffield Wednesday finally getting a win.
Yeah, that was a bad loss for Blackburn. They play, I watched some of their football, they play like us. They play some unbelievable football. I was surprised they lost at Wednesday, but then again, you know, Wednesday got another new manager. I think they're finding some form down there, a bit like the QPR manager who's come in. Yeah, Smodic's, yeah, amazing. If you want a golden boot, you know, I'm kicking myself. I didn't put a golden boot fucking clause in, you know, where we had money on Ivan Tyne. We have a promotion bonus, we have a sell on, but I didn't put a fucking golden boot clause
in. You thought that one's not even worth thinking about?
Well, I just, you know what, at the end of the day, it was like he wanted to go. It was kind of like I was dragging my heels on the deal because I wanted more, but we pushed Blackburn to the limit, yeah. You know, on what
I mean, you got a good deal for him.
We got a great deal. We got a great deal. You know, we felt it was a great deal. He felt it was a great deal. He signed a new deal. It's life-changing for him and his family. Listen, I'm delighted for Sammy, and hopefully he gets a 12, 14 million quid move and we make another couple of million out of the deal. Happy days for everyone.
And the Wayne Rooney effect continues, I think, at Birmingham. So they drew 0-0 at home to Rotherham.
Yeah, I love Tom Brady and everything else, but he needs to calm down on social media, the goat, you know what I mean? Because it's like, you know, seriously, you don't know what you're doing there football-wise. And, you know, I get he's trying to bring like a lot of kudos to the club, but that decision now is like, yeah. I mean, everyone said it. I said it early on. Obviously, I said it in Talk Sport.
Yeah.
You know, sick of talking about him. And I felt they made a bad decision and nothing's changed to, you know. It'd be interesting if they continue like this till January, that the owners have to write a big check and say we made a mistake or what happens. But yeah, so far, Wayne's managerial career isn't exactly on an upward trajectory, is it?
No. And so if we go into League One, so Mike Bonner sacked by Cambridge, which, yeah, I know somebody very well who's a Cambridge fan. And the discussion we were having the other day was around, you know, if you're a club like Cambridge, and no disrespect to Cambridge, but it's like, does ambition, can you be too ambitious? So, and what I mean by that is, you know, you've come into League One, you've kind of consolidated in League One. Yes.
He's done brilliant. He's done brilliant
last year, but do you be careful what you wish for?
Yeah, he beat us in the derby. They've done brilliant. Obviously, we, you know, battered the life out of them the other week. You know, it's kind of like, I guess it's as well, how long every season do you go where you're not winning for 10 games and you're not scoring goals? And it's kind of like, but you're maybe going to stay up. And I guess they want a different perspective. Maybe for me, it got stale for him. He was offered, I believe, a championship job 18 months ago or about 14 months ago.
His stock was very high, you know,
right. 18 months ago, wasn't it? Let that be a lesson sometimes to a young manager who's done brilliant, whatever else. There's only so far you can go with clubs. Move on, take a deal, get into the next job. And that's where sometimes you have to say to managers who are accused of being disloyal and leaving and going to another job and whatever, it's a short lifespan. I can't criticize any manager like the Oxford manager who goes to Bristol or, you know, whatever else. But you can't criticize it because you know what? you're only 6, 7, 8 shit results away.
You're a mug.
Anyway. Right. Yeah. So in fairness to him, he'll be back in football. I'm sure he'll get another job. He was never my cup of tea with some of the stuff he said about Posh, but I thought he did a great job for Cambridge United. And I think it was the right decision for them. And it was the wrong decision for him as regards to he should have gone a year ago.
It's probably harder being a local boy as well, you know, being
100%
about, because you kind of feel like you want to take the journey.
Yeah, but he's got legendary status. He's got legendary status. He beat the Posh, you know, minor miracle. He kept them up. He got them promoted. They beat Newcastle in the Cup. He's got some great headlines, and he never took them out of League One. So he can leave with his head held high. I don't believe they were in the relegation spots when he left. So I think fine. Portsmouth had a good win yesterday. The Cobblers let us down there. Yeah, it's going to be good. You know, Christmas is really going to start. Christmas, January starts settling the men from the boys, the amount of games you've got in quick progression. It's going to be very interesting. There's a lot of teams in form. Blackpool are starting to kick ass. Derby are like being very sneaky, winning every time I look. You know, who else is in there? You've got obviously the top three.
Stevenage, you got Barnes.
Yeah. It's going to be interesting. It's going to be fascinating. We're going to play a lot of them at home in the new year. So, yeah.
What did you make of that Barnsley goal against Wickham when he badged into the keeper and the keeper dropped it?
I think Wickham have a bit of a reputation for time wasting and stuff.
Yeah.
So I don't know if some people would look at that as just desserts, but I thought to me it was like, I'd be devastated if that was given against us. But equally, I'd say to my goalkeeper, like, you're weak as piss fucking dropping that with a little barge. What are you doing? If you're going to do a little dive, keep the football. Like, what are you doing? So, you know, but obviously the ref, maybe it already, I don't know the schematics.
I'm sure he's been wound up already. And
yeah, who knows?
You probably can't say it, but I will. You know, Darren Drysdale likes to be the center of everyone's attention. So, you know, there's probably something that it gave him the opportunity to.
No comments.
Right.
No comments.
I'm so, just anyway. Happy that he was reffing in League One and not League Two.
No, you're lucky. He'll be back next weekend in your place.
I will.
No comments.
You know, sending somebody off in the car park again.
Yeah. So, and then League Two, was there any games in League Two?
I'm just having a look. I don't think there were any games in League Two. So we certainly didn't play. And when I look at the table, it looks like there's no changes in the table. So it's all on the FA Cup. So let me just bring up the FA Cup to have a look at any interesting results.
This will be the shortest podcast ever.
I know. Bolton banging the goals in again, 5 against Harrogate.
Yep.
Cambridge got 4 against Fleetwood.
Good result.
Charlton out to Gillingham.
Morecambe had an unbelievable result away at Wickham. I think they won 2-0.
Yeah, they did.
So, good results, yeah.
And that was the one change in League Two. So Derek Adams jumping back to Ross County and going back up to Scotland.
Don't blame him.
No, I mean, he's done as well as you can possibly do at Morecambe.
Great decision for him.
I think going back there probably helped his reputation after City as opposed to hindering his reputation.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Look, he's a good manager. Mm-hmm. I think we just spoke about it before. You know, it's a thankless task going to a Morecambe and the size of a club and the lack of support you can get sometimes. It was the right decision for him. It's not a bad job in Scotland. It's probably closer to home.
Yeah,
fair play to him. Anyone else? Is there any other jobs available at the moment?
I'm not sure, to be honest. I think Grimsby got filled, didn't it? That was Artel, who was the crew manager.
Yeah. Went there. David Artel. Yeah.
David Artel, yeah. Who ended up at Gillingham?
What's his name? The Steve Bruce's guy, Clemens.
Oh, yeah.
Clemens,
I think. We talked about that, didn't we, a couple of weeks ago.
Good decision. Yeah, they had a good win yesterday.
Yeah.
So, interesting.
We do have a couple of questions.
Yeah, hit me. Hit me, baby.
We have Bantam Pete. So, question for Dara that's been prompted by the high number of EFL managerial changes. The implications of replacing a manager can be very costly, as it could include not only his staff, but potentially a new squad of players. My question is, what kind of incentive clauses can be inserted into contracts, such as league position or points per game, where you're basically giving a manager a 3-year contract, but sacking them, say, after 6 months without compensation if they fail to deliver on certain metrics?
Different jobs, different managers. I know some clubs who potentially, you know, are not Hollywood type clubs where managers are trying to get a chance. They'll put in the contract 3 months dismissal clause, which means basically if you fire them, you only have to pay them 3 months' wages. Equally, if they want to leave, they only have to give 3 months' notice for a club taking them.
Yeah.
That would be a club that, you know, if nobody wanted our job, and there was a new manager desperate, he would sign that contract. If you're after a top manager, if you're after a manager who's popular, they're not going to agree to 3 months. They're going to want longer. So in some of our circumstances, we've had managers with 6 months and 12 months.
Yeah.
And I've had clauses in there that anytime we're outside the top six, you get paid less and a quicker dismissal payment. Mm-hmm. Then if you're in the top six and I want to make the change, we're going to pay you over 12 months. But if you should happen to get a job in the meantime, as long as the money is of equal value, we stop paying you. So if I'm paying a manager 200 grand a year and I fire him, I've got to pay him that for the next 12 months. If he goes and gets another job and he's on 200 grand a year at the new club, I don't have to pay a penny. If he's a clever cunt and decides to stick it to me, like what's happened before, him and his number two can go and say to the new club, we'll take a lot less money because that motherfucker's got to still pay us for the next 8 months. And basically, I'm paying their fucking wages still. So there's all sorts of things. And you still live and learn from some of the things you agree to. So as I have done as well recently. So there's release clause in contracts. There's all sorts of things. So that's just the way it goes. And in incentives-wise, there's for my manager, there's promotion bonuses. There's wage rise for the championship. There's bonuses for goals. There's bonuses for young players that are produced from the academy. There's bonuses and incentives, all sorts of things that you want your club philosophy to match. So you want to make sure the manager profits from that because he's the one, you know, enacting it. So you put those things in there.
Now, I think it's important to say, you know, I think as an outsider, you look and think, well, he's got a 3-year contract and we've sacked him a year in. We've got to pay him up for 2 years. That's not really, how it works.
You say, it's usually a year. It's usually a year.
Talked as an example about a manager gaming the system and basically taking as much as they can get. And then, you know, salary goes up once that 12 months is over. How normal is that?
It's never happened before to me. It's happened to me once. Most managers are ethically right that they know that when they get another job, there's a certain criteria of wage you get in League 2, League 1, certain clubs. And when a manager leaves, you know, he shouldn't get involved in playing games to try and stick to a previous owner and then try and take, you know, usually when you go to a club, they have a set wage they pay the manager. Yeah. And it's always the same. And you negotiate in good faith. Yeah. And I would like to think my managers who've left in good faith, Steve Evans, he left us and he went to Gillingham. And he basically got paid the same or more than what he was on at us. So I didn't have to pay him anymore. And Steve didn't try and get smart with that because he knew football's a small industry. You try and play games because I would have been furious with Scally. And equally, I wouldn't do that. I've never said to a manager, whether it's Darren, whether it's someone else, like Grant McCann was still getting paid by Hull or still had something to do with Hull. And I never got into what were you at Hull and let's do this and let's try and get one over on Hull. You just don't do that. You know what I mean? So ethics come into it, but some people just aren't as ethically the same as everyone else. So anyway, you live and learn.
News travels fast amongst other owners, you know.
Yeah, they do. They do. But I didn't blame the club. I blame the people who did it. They did it on purpose. It was basically like the stick one to me. So that will never be fucking forgotten.
So the last question said, after Jordan Gill's great performance, and victory on Saturday night and talking from getting a world title shot, would you be willing to host this world title shot at Posh as a homecoming with the whole city coming to support him?
I messaged the champ last night and obviously said, love it, you know, proud of you. And absolutely, absolutely. If we could have a world title fight at Posh, we would put that on in a heartbeat. Eddie Hearn, if you're listening, let's get it on, as he likes to sing. You know, so I think for Jordan and his story, and he's a massive Posh fan, his family are. The day we got promoted with COVID and everyone was behind the gates, he was one of those fans there. I'd love him to come to a game in the next couple of weeks and, you know, so the fans can give him a round of applause because that was brilliant. And look, I'm Irish, I'm a Mick Conlon fan. But what Jordan did to him last night, he's got something. I mean, some of his fights are exciting. The one where he was pretty much down and out and then he knocked the guy out like in the last few rounds, he's got something. He's dynamite. He draws in people's eyes, and that in boxing is like that's money. That's show business. So, you know, I'd love for him, you know, to earn some serious dough over his next few fights. And I'd love for us to be part of that, earning some dough, having a sellout at our place for a fight. So we would put that on in a heartbeat.
Great for the community too. Like, everybody wins.
Let's get it on. You know what I mean? So I'm all for that. You know what I mean? So yeah, if we can make Alex, who's massive, our commercial manager, loves, you know, sports, UFC, boxing. He'll be all over that. He'll be stalking Eddie Hearn. He'll be stalking Jordan. Jordan knows me one after the leak about the shirts. So we'll be all over that and we will try and get that on. So God bless him and love to see that last night. And I thought his speech afterwards is very inspirational about the stuff he's gone through. So yeah, really happy for a local boy. Anytime people have done well in the community, like it makes me smile. So yeah, onwards and upwards.
All right, well let's call it a wrap there then.
Let's call it a wrap, baby.
Being around on Sunday to record this week rather than Monday.
Hey, all good, my man. Hey, good luck with the move, and we'll reconvene next week. So have a good week to all the Bantam fans, the Posh fans, and everyone out there in general. God bless you all.
Here's hoping we're both one step further in the Bristol Motors Trophy.
Listen, at Wembley, that's where we're going to meet. You know, it's written in the stars. You know what I mean? So it's going to be like a seller. It's going to the Bradford fans will be buying a lot of tickets for that. So yeah, let's do it, baby. Anyway, all good, my man. Have a great Sunday.
Thanks. Talk to you soon. Care. Thanks, everybody. Bye.